Ida Bismeyer. They call me Anateok here. It's Grandma. Everybody calls me Anateok in town. And I was born in Kotzebue, and I'm 75. I was born in 1935. I actually didn't spend that much time in Kotzebue itself. I spent a lot of time out camping. For different seasons, we had different camps to go to provide, you know, the food for the winter. Tisolik is our fish camp. We go there in the spring and then do seal hunting and fishing. And at times, there are different camps we went to every spring, you know, like Tisolik or down Sealing Point or just beside of Sealing Point. When we do go to Sealing Point first, we usually then go back to Tisolik, and then in the fall, early fall, we'd spend our time at Anigok, and it's right between Tisolik and Sealing Point, Ikiptevik. And we cut more fish, and they used to dig great big trenches and put grass and stuff, and then put the fish in. They used to have what they call kargisok. It dig through the sand, and then when the fish are going out, there was an opening, and then it'll close from the river to the ocean. But my grandparents and all the elders knew when to move there for when the fish come out from the river and going out to the ocean. They dig trenches on the side of the opening to the ocean. And the fish, when they come out, they go to these trenches inside, and then they close up the mouths of the trenches. And the water would, you know, evaporate, and then they just shovel or beg the fish and into the trenches that they dig and say that and cover it up with sod or grass or willows, whatever. And then that would be saved for the dog food for the winter. From Tisolik in the winter when it first freezes, because it's right, and we'd go to Sitokoyuk. It's right behind Tisolik, you know, in the hills right across there. And we would winter there, and there was about four different families. They had their cabins, and you know, up there, up in Sitokoyuk. There was a lot of trees, so it was, and it was inside the hills, so it was warmer than being like in Kotzebue for the time being. And then we would come home right around Christmas time. We'd go to Kotzebue, and then from Kotzebue, sometimes before it melts, we'd either go back to that Sitokoyuk camp or back to Tisolik again, like in April or May. So we didn't have the ones that lived the nomadic life. We didn't have time for school for us children. So we did miss a lot of, I missed a lot of school. was mostly to provide food for the winter, you know, and like in Cedar Creek, there was a lot of rabbits and ptarmigan and caribou and animals that winter here. So there was a lot of food there for us. And there are different camps that we went to, but these were the main camps we went to for the year. I actually grew up with my grandparents. Most of my growing years were with my grandparents. And my uncles and cousins, you know, they always had a lot of like me and my first cousin grew up together. We were 2 months apart. She was a little older than I was. And they had us and kept us. And we also had older cousins that lived there and did the hunting and cutting wood and making sleds and the stuff that they do in the winter. I learned to sew and with my grandma, you know, like after my grandpa would go out hunting or checking snares or trap. He would come back and then he'd give me his parkie, you know, so that I could sew the holes. These are my first memories, you know, with my grandparents. It was with my grandparents. So that's how I think I learned to sew, because he used to just give me his parkie. And to this day, I was thinking not too long ago, or a few years back, I wonder if it was the same holes I kept mending day week after week. I was learning, and I learned. My grandma always had me alongside of her when she's cutting fish, talking in Inupiaq, and explain to me why the fish were cut certain ways, you know, for some for dog food and some for stinky eggs and some to half dried, like a salmon, how you could cut it with the belly in and that so the eggs can get they just keep the female eggs in and half dry it or dry it and then freeze it and put it in ditches. They put a lot of stuff in ditches that, or out in my citadel, which is a building that's dug into the ground, most of it, and covered with sod, where they put the food in so the other animals couldn't get into it, or it would be where we could get to easily. And then they would put something like in gunny sacks and put it up, and some of the fish would get, they call it umurk, it would kind of age. And that was real, one of the delicacies that they had. It's kind of stinky, you know, aged. It was dog teams when I left. Uh-huh. And skin boats, a lot of skin boats, but not, they had the wooden motor boats. I think my grandpa had gotten one of the first Evinrudes, and I don't know if it was, I think it was a 5-horse, and they would put it on the skin boat. They fixed it so that they could put it on the boat. And their body fat was really fast, because before that, they would have to use sails going to camp and back, or dog team, you know, back and forth. When we're traveling along the beach, they would put some of the dogs on their harnesses, and someone would walk with the dogs and pull the dogs, and then there would be another person steering the boat, making sure it doesn't get beached. And that's how we traveled when I was growing up. A lot of different ways to do all the stuff that I had learned and I had forgotten, because when I turned 14, I went to Mount Edgecombe. Then I had to come back when I was 16 because my mother was put into the, I think that's when I started staying with Mom off and on, was sent to a sanitarium. She had tuberculosis. So I stayed home, and then, I think when I was 17 or going on 18, they had opened a school for practical nursing. You didn't have to have a high school diploma as long as you passed the state board test. So I went there and graduated when I was 18 from practical nursing school at Mount Edgecombe. Graduated from, then I went back, I filled out the form and I passed for the school. So I went back and worked, it was a year of practical nursing school. So, and then I worked around like at Bethel and Mount Edgecombe, and then worked odd jobs, and then came home again, and then got married and moved out to California. The children, I had two here in Alaska, one here in Kotz and one in Nome. And two in Lompoc in California. And then I got divorced, and then, I don't know, some friends of mine were from Montana. So we tagged along, me and my four kids, a single parent traveling with kids, four kids. Sometimes I think, you know, that wasn't a very smart move. But it was because I went to, I had a little stepdaughter, foster child, and my youngest daughter were same age, and they had Head Start. And, I had cancer of the female. And from the Head Start, the social services would come over and pick me up so I wouldn't have to be home alone, you know, and going through this cancer thing, surgery after surgery. And they would come pick me up, and I'd let me volunteer in the classrooms. And so then I became an aide, and then went on to take preschool classes and became certified there and worked there from then graduated and taught preschool there. I came home from Santa Barbara on vacation, never went back. Came home on vacation, and I looked down, and it was in November, I believe. I looked down, and where am I? What a culture shock. I hate to admit it, but yet it is the truth. You know, moving here from back home, coming back home to Santa Barbara. I just didn't want to go back. I saw my family, I hadn't been around them for so long, and it just felt so good. You know, you're here with your own family and your own people, and then I just didn't want to go back. When Manila opened, I went to work for the hospital just as an aide. And I had arthritis really bad, so they did surgery on my knees and my feet. And so I quit working there when I was, 62? Anyway, I had this teacher, Sandy Kowalski, we call her Selectina. She was a teacher at the big school, we call it. And I had her two older boys in my classroom. That's when they became licensed, and I was a teacher there, preschool teacher. They wanted me for a teacher, and I'll make for Inupiaq teacher. So, I wasn't fluent. I had forgotten a lot of my Inupiaq, a lot of the things that I had learned, but she came up with, she was one of the board members when they first started, Nikkei Chok. She called me and she said, "I'm coming up." So here she comes, here, fill out the rest of this application form. She said, "Today's the last day." I'm not fluent. I explained to her, but she made me sign it and fill it out. She brought it back and brought it to the IRA, and next thing I know, I'm working here. And I wasn't fluent, but we just kind of bonded, you know, and melded together with her tea, with her Inupiaq, and my, somehow I got to the point where I was teaching preschool teachers, you know. Anyway, I trained her in what I know about preschool teaching, and I learned, she taught me Inupiaq stuff, and somehow we made the first 2 years, and the third year it was easy. I got my confidence back. Nobody had confidence at all in us. They said 2 years they'll last, third year they'll fold. This is our 13th year. It's the feeling this place gives people, because it's the way I was growing up. You know, our home was always open to anyone. Come in and eat, help yourself, you know, dig around and find something to eat if you're hungry. Or we're doing something, they'd join us and start sewing if we're sewing, and if we're cutting seal or making dried meat or something, they would just join. And that's how it is here. Just reminded me, the way it is run here in Nikkei is, it's like a family. You know, you feel welcome when you walk, the people walk in here. They learned the stuff that we learned when we were growing up. A lot of people don't know. They had forgotten, they didn't want to make a mistake on teaching it differently. Their parents didn't really know how, or they didn't want to do it because they knew how, but they didn't really. That's how I was until I started working at Nikkei Chok when they opened up. But we have gone through all of that, and we teach it here. Thank you. people come to me about it because they didn't have any confidence in me at all. But I'm only kid because I had forgotten so many. I was gone for so many years that I had forgotten. But I think the third year, after 2 years, things started clicking back. But it took a long time for me to, I mean, I would remember, but not total, not the total things that I had learned. I would just remember bits and pieces. And every year, more would come back. And then now I probably could do a lot of stuff. And believe it or not, I learned it with the Nikkei Cho students. It helped me remember, and if it hadn't been for Nikkei Choate, everything, I never would have even thought about a lot of stuff that I do now. Nikkei Choate means anything is possible. Inupiaq school that we teach Inupiaq language, but it isn't just Inupiaq language that we teach. We teach them culture that we grew up with, the Inupiaq culture. Like in the fall, this fall, it'll be a berry picking time for the people, Inupiaq people in town. So when they come to school, they'll be out picking berries. And we teach them how to preserve food. We'd get a phone call. We'd be, you know, teaching or doing our class projects or whatever we're doing. And someone would call and say, hey, I have an ugruk. Would you guys need an ugruk? Oh, yeah, just bring it in. And since we're a private school, we're able to get away with a lot of the traditional things that we teach. So they'd bring the ugruk in, and we would let them help us cut the ugruk and explain to them as we go along, this is the blubber, this is, you know, and this is the meat. We're going to cook some later, and either for snack or we'll cook some, and then you guys can have the rest, some of it, you know, taste for taste, just taste it. And so they would learn how to prepare the ugruk and how to make the seal oil, and then we would cook some. But the children would help cut the blubber, and we would put them in little pint jars and let them put the seal oil and the blubber. And they would take it home to their parents or their grandparents. So, see, they learn from the beginning on how it is made and cooked. And they're so proud. They're so proud of doing it, especially when we have them bring it home or when the parents come in or anybody and they eat some of the stuff that the kids have prepared. And jam or any of that stuff, you know, they see it, they know they were involved in it, and it makes them feel really, really proud of themselves for being able to participate in what we elders had learned when we were their age. They're proud because they were involved in all of this that went on before you actually sit down and eat it. And that really gives them a lot of self-esteem. They're proud of being who they are, and that really means a lot. They see me in town or anywhere, post office or the store, and they automatically speak in Inupiaq or hi, you know. Hi, how are you today? And we converse before people used to stop and stare, you know, and they're real self-conscious of it. But after a time, the people in town, I think, are so used to these little kids speaking the language, you know, and then the older people, they're not ashamed to speak the language anymore or do the culture. They do it openly now, where before it was laid back, they were laid back about it. I was too there. I want to see them go as far as they could because they know they can do anything. That's what Nikkei Chote is. Anything is possible. You set your dream and you go for it. And they won't stop because they've been taught to do the best that they can. It's a challenge, so I'm going to go for it. And they'll excel in whatever they do, whatever they make up their mind that they... They love challenges, and that is what really is so amazing. I have 12 grandchildren and 13 great-grands. My own children, they're doing good. My oldest son came up, and the others came up later on. Like I said, I had two in Alaska and two in California. There were two that were born in Alaska. Now, one is total Inupiaq. I mean, you know, he hunts, he preserves food, and he understands Inupiaq, but he doesn't speak it. Actually, does live the subsistence life here, you know. He works at engineering in the hospital. But he does a lot of subsistence hunting. My older daughter, married a guy that was born here and was raised right around Alaska, mostly here in Cottsville. And my two younger son, my son and my daughter, moved to Anchorage and lived there. The ones that were born in California live in Anchorage. But my one son is working for Nana, and he came up to work at Nana here, but he's supposed to be going back to Anchorage within the next couple months. Lost my mother. She was 91, two summers ago. It was kind of rough there for a year or so. But she told me that I really did make her proud. I mean, she waited like 70 years to tell me that, but she did. She did. They're all pretty well. I'm happy with all my family.